Good evening, George. Welcome to the Space Show.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here in Australia again. I seem to come here fairly frequently now.
Well, you're here now for, as you say, very frequently. What is it that brings you to Australia much more often than maybe in the past?
Well, we're in the process of building a spaceport out at Woomera, and we're looking forward to some launches about the middle of next year. And that causes me to come here first to work through the government interfaces, and secondly to go get the thing built.
This is the Kistler project. Quite a revolutionary project. What's so unusual about it than things you've done in the past?
Well, this is the first time that we've ever built a fully reusable launch vehicle. And that means that we're actually taking off and flying into orbit and bringing the orbiting vehicle back down to land right where it took off from. And that, we're hoping, will change the whole future of space transportation.
And you're not only going to recover the actual part that goes into space, but rather unusually, you'll be recovering the stages as well, although they do that on the space shuttle at the moment, don't they?
Well, actually, no. They leave the external tank in orbit and then deorbit it later, so that it's not fully reusable, and that's one of the reasons it costs so much. The other reason is that we've tried to design this so that it's as much of an automated system as possible. It has its own health monitoring, so it keeps track of its own health instead of having a whole crew of people checking it out. And that makes a tremendous difference in the costs of operation. So that we really have concentrated on those things that were expensive in the past and tried to eliminate to the maximum extent possible that expense.
Is there a reason why you've chosen to launch at an inland area rather than a coastal area? After all, Vandenberg is on the coast, even the shuttle launch pads and so on at the Kennedy Space Center on the coast, and those stages drop down into the ocean and then are retrieved. Surely a landing on land, you know, hard ground, is much more difficult than into the ocean.
Well, you know, as a matter of fact, it isn't. In the Apollo program, we looked at the Apollo capsule, and we could have landed on land with about the same impact as we did in the ocean. So the impact is not the problem. The real problem is having a wide enough area so that when you come down on parachutes, the wind doesn't blow you out of your landing area. And that's the principal reason that Woomera is so attractive, because it has very large flat areas in which to land. And so that's one of the attractive things about that Australian outback.
The Australian outback, of course, and the area of Woomera has got a lot of what we call gibbers, that is stones and things like that sticking up the surface. Would that be a problem to you in the landing?
Actually, the area that we're landing in has almost no stones of any size, and we've walked it now a number of times, and it looks like an almost perfect landing site from our point of view. You know, we come down on parachutes and airbags, so we aren't really moving vis-a-vis the ground appreciably. And a flat, smooth area is our only real requirement. However, it does have to be about a mile in diameter.
The Kistler project is rather unusual in new developments in that it doesn't actually use a great deal of new technology. You, of course, have worked for a long time in the Lunar program and other programs in NASA. What technologies have you brought from there? What experience have you brought to Kistler?
Well, it's interesting. The engines we're using happen to have been built in Russia for their lunar landing program, and they've been stored ever since.
So I bet you'd have loved to have seen them back 20, 30 years ago, wouldn't you?
Of course. That's one of the things that you find after the fact. But in any event, they're excellent engines, and that's one of the things that Kay carried over from the lunar program. The whole idea of the vehicle itself was really started with the shuttle. This has the same basic concepts as the shuttle itself, except that we're fully reusable, and they have found that they needed to throw away parts of it. I think that the other thing that we've done, though, is take advantage of some of the technological leaps that have been taken in the meantime. The shell of the vehicle is made with epoxy graphite, and that wasn't really available in the Apollo time frame. Yet it's one that is now used in many of the aerospace vehicles. And it gives us the extra weight advantage that we need in order to get a two-stage to orbit and return vehicle. Coming back down, incidentally, does take some propellants and some additional weight, which, because we have to protect the vehicle itself from the reentry heating, velocities coming back are pretty high.
Yes, and Kistler's also accumulated or coordinated quite an interesting team of people. Who are the other people you're working with?
Well, the design team that we put together consists of the ex-head of Johnson Space Center, who also was the person that designed the space shuttle itself and was in charge of building it down there. And Dale Myers, that's Aaron Cohen. Dale Myers is the ex-deputy of NASA, but he was the person that was the chief engineer on the Apollo spacecraft and has had a remarkable experience since then of working, running the B-1 program and a whole lot of other programs. And Henry Pohl was the chief engineer at Johnson Space Center, and he came over and helped in lay out the design of the K-1. So we've had a very great group of people in the design phase, and we have Joe Cuzzopoli, who actually built the orbiter at Rockwell, was in charge of manufacturing the orbiter, and so he's in charge of our building of the K-1. And then we have a set of young engineers that we brought in from just graduated from the university, and they are providing the interface with the computers and the and a lot of the interfaces through the program. So we've got a team of old hands and new hands.
And a good exchange between the two of them.
Excellent. It's really very rewarding to see the progress we've been able to make with this program.
Obviously, George, you're working on the K-1 and concentrating all your efforts on that. But do you have any thoughts as to what might follow when you get this successfully operating?
Well, we actually are not doing any conscious thinking of a follow-on until we have some experience with the K-1. It'll be about 2 years before we're really able to formulate a second-generation vehicle. And we are doing a little bit of design concepts at the present time. And but they're not at a level that is even talkable about.
Do you think that, just think fantasy now, suppose that we were doing the Apollo program now, what would we do differently about it with the new technologies we have?
Well, I don't know that we would do anything different in terms of technology, because we used a set of technologies that are probably as good as anything we have today. The basic problem is we haven't been doing any real research over the past 20 or 30 years on new engines, new materials. Some new materials, the epoxy graphite. But, for example, we're still using aluminum tanks, and we dearly would love to have some composite tanks to store the liquids in, because that would save us a great deal of weight. And weight is a driving factor in the design of these vehicles.
Has that lack of investment been a disappointment to you?
I'm sorry?
Has that lack of investment been a disappointment to you?
It has indeed. I've been trying for 30 years to get NASA and the government to do something constructive with their money instead of using it for the odd things that they do. It doesn't make a great deal of sense to try to build a reusable launch vehicle, a single-stage-to-orbit vehicle, without having done the basic technological developments that are necessary to actually build such a vehicle.
Where do you think we might have been had that investment been made over those years? Where might we have been now?
We would now have a colony on Mars, no question in my mind, if we had continued the even a fraction of the investment level that we did in Apollo. Remember, we built the Apollo program with the view of continuing space exploration, so we were able to build six Saturn V's a year and fly them with all up vehicles, with the spacecraft and everything else. And that, if we'd continued just that capability, we would have gone to have had a colony on the moon and been off to Mars and probably been mining the asteroids, and all sorts of things were possible.
So your aim then is to achieve access to space in order that we can start to do these things.
Exactly. That's the whole thrust of the K-1 program and its follow-ons, is to get the cost of going into space down to where you and I can afford to ride up there.
Okay, and so you're going to be spending quite a bit of time here then in Australia. Will you be here after the development phase, or will you sort of continue to come down over the years?
Oh, we'll probably be down more than once a year. I've been down here three times this year so far, and we haven't even started to build out there. We cleared the pathway, and we really have started all of the experimental work we had to do.
At this stage, when are you looking at your first launch?
About the middle of next year.
And have you got a payload for that, or is it just simply a development flight?
The first flights will be without a payload. They're just test flights. They'll be heavily instrumented, but we don't plan to carry payloads until we've got it thoroughly checked out. Besides that, most people don't want to fly on new vehicles.
Yes, the insurers are quite happy about your project?
Yes, as a matter of fact, they're hopeful that we will represent a breakthrough in insuring rates.
Thank you for joining us tonight on the Space Show, George.
Well, it's been a great pleasure. It's always a pleasure to come to Australia, and I like the people and the things that they do.
Thank you very much.